I'm sorry, Vicki, can you just sit for yourself?
Good morning. I'm Vicki Frymuth. I direct a center for health and risk communication at the University of Georgia. And I'm delighted to be here on this panel and celebrating 10 years of this group. I think it's amazing how fast that time has gone. I have been working lately on the topic of health disparities, and that's what I want to talk a little bit about, accomplishments in the last 10 years and some future challenges I see to that work. We all have this disclosure slide now. This is an audience I don't need to describe the problem of health disparities to, but I will just summarize it with this quote, that wherever in the world you live, if you are poor and a minority, you live sicker and die sooner. And I think it's very important to look at the way communication might be able to contribute to eliminating health disparities. I'm sure it cannot do that in and of itself, but it certainly can make a valuable contribution. And I want to talk about four areas in this work. First is just the way we frame this topic and the language that we use to talk about it. And then a somewhat new idea for our field is that we not only have to look at health disparities, we also have to look at communication disparities. Thirdly, that we have focused, and I think Tom alluded to this as well, we focused a lot of our interventions on individuals, not on the environments, the communities, the networks in which they function. And in some cases, we've still been fairly superficial about the way we try to target information to particular vulnerable audiences. And finally, we've neglected policy pretty much. So I want to talk about those points. First, let's look at these frames. And I find it very interesting when you try to look at the literature and realize how many different frames, and I'm sure you could come up with more than this. But we have framed this topic of health disparities in lots of different ways, and there are different bodies of literature out there. In this most recent political administration, it seems like health literacy has become the preferable frame to address this topic, and we may see that changing. But I think it does make a difference in what we do when we see these frames. I also wanted to point out the language choices, because here we see a lot of values implicit in this choice of language. And I'll just pick on the last one, which is one I have used myself in my writing. We often find what I'm going to call mostly today vulnerable audiences referred to as hard to reach audience. And I just want to suggest how different the focus of the work is if you think about those audiences as hardly reached, where how that shifts the responsibility. I give credit to Dr. Viswanath for calling our attention to the idea that we have to be concerned about communication disparities as well as health disparities. And I just want to show you a little bit of data around the first way these disparities play out. First is access and use, and there are many, many data sources I could use here. This is pretty recent data on the percent change in home broadband adoption by household income. And let me say, these data were collected before the current economic crisis, so you can imagine how much more of a change you're going to see. But it's increasing across all the income levels except the lowest one, and I think we may even see that kind of graph look worse now. So we definitely have disparities in communication, in access, and use. And, you know, as Tom told you, we're just constantly changing media sources and opportunities, and there's almost always a cost associated, so that access gap is hard to close. There's also an attention and processing gap, and this is one of the places where I think the health literacy work has been so useful, is really looking at those disparities and things that we might do to try to close the attention and processing disparities. But finally, the capacity and ability to act, I think, has been even more neglected, that a lot of times we forget that we may be engaged in a behavior change issue. And it isn't simply an individual's desire to change their behavior, but we really have to look at the context in which they live. A frequent example given here is the five-a-day program. You know, can try to convince people to eat more fruits and vegetables, but if there are no sources in their neighborhoods to buy these products, then it makes it very hard to engage in the behavior, and that's something we need to keep looking at. So what have we done to try to adapt campaigns to vulnerable audiences? I think mostly we have taken what I think these pamphlets illustrate, which is not bad, but it is sort of a superficial adaptation where we're simply trying to take the most surface, as Reznikoff would call them, the most surface characteristics of the culture and adapt our messages, in this case language and visual images. A few campaigns have actually started to try to take a particular ethnic or cultural group and start sort of from scratch and tailor a program specifically to them. The Red Cross Early HIV Education Program, which the African proverb poster represents, was a really unique example of that in that they only allowed people who professionals who belonged to that ethnic group to work on that campaign or those educational materials. And as you can see, it looks quite different than the approaches for the other cultural groups for HIV education. And the second example is for Native Americans on diabetes. I would ask you, though, I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done in this notion of tailoring and targeting to ethnicity and cultural groups. Some of Dutta's recent work suggests that we've been relatively culturally sensitive, but we haven't been culturally centered. And I don't have time to fully explain his ideas there, but I would urge you to take a look at them because it is a much more in-depth type of tailoring than we have been doing in this area. I think that we have focused far too much in our efforts in communication on the individual. And you know, if you ask most people about why people engage in health behaviors, they always come up with an individual responsibility answer. And we haven't done enough to look at the networks and the communities that people live in and that also influence their behaviors. Again, Tom talked a little bit about this. We know that for some of these vulnerable audiences that their support networks are really eroding and they might not have access to some of the virtual support networks that some of us have access to. I've been very encouraged recently in finding some interesting campaigns that actually try to build social capital. That's their whole purpose in the campaign. Nothing about individual behavior change, but an opportunity to try to take a community and actually increase the social capital. And in the emergency preparedness area, people are doing this and using the language of resiliency and trying to figure out how to make communities more resilient to a disaster. So I think there's some really interesting work out there now to kind of point us in a direction of looking more at networks and communities. But policy does seem to remain fairly neglected. I think it's a critical element, and I think we have a lot to offer in communication for policy. There are many levels of policy that we could direct things at, all the way from a very local level to a national level. Media advocacy is one of the tools that we've used, I think, quite successfully in a lot of areas like tobacco, and we're beginning to use more in looking at the obesity issue and really attacking fast food and vending machines in schools, et cetera. I won't go through all those differences, but you can see that media advocacy is quite a different approach than an individually based health communication campaign. So I want to conclude by giving you some of the things I hope that the field will do in sort of the next 10 years or maybe even faster than that. I think we have to move beyond superficial adaptation to culture. We have to understand how to actually give people voices that haven't had voices in these efforts to help them shape the campaigns in new ways. And I would ask you to look at this culture-centered approach to see if that might be the ideal. We need alternatives to individually focused efforts, and I think this is one of the most exciting new directions that we could go, where we really do focus more on networks and on communities than we focus on individuals. And finally, more attention to policy, and I would urge us both communication policy as well as health policies. Thank you.